Hello, everyone. Welcome to Show Talk
Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Today, the guest is Ms. Melba Moore. We're going to go into some commercials, and then we're going to come back and listen to and have our conversation with Ms. Moore.
And risk youth is defined by statute as a child under the age of 18 who meets at least one of the following three requirements: is absent from home for at least 72 consecutive hours without parental consent, or is beyond parental control such that his slash her behavior endangers the health, safety, or welfare of the child or any other person, has a substance abuse problem for which there are no pending criminal charges relating to the substance abuse. At Camp Penny, we have found that at-risk youth struggles with complex issues and scenarios that are brought on by peers, mentors, family members, and difficult social environments. Camp Penny understands the increased complexity of today's at-risk youth, hands-on parents. Camp Penny works with nonprofits and federal agencies to find solutions. Today's youth are exposed to a variety of negatives, making them more at risk to injury, academic failure, and poor health. Teens who are likely to be more at risk are usually those that do not have a strong support system at home and in the community, as well as teens who are not coping well with the different challenges that they are facing. So what sorts of programs will Camp Penny have? Camp Penny will provide outdoor activities as a main feature of the camp. There is no sitting around getting bored at Camp Penny. The girls will eat a well-balanced and healthy diet, then get outside for some well-planned and high.
Hello, Ms. Melba Moore? Hello, Ms. Melba Moore?
And at-risk youth is defined by statute as a child under the age of 18 who meets at least one of the following three requirements: is absent from home for at least 72 consecutive hours without parental consent, or is beyond parental control such that his slash her behavior endangers the health, safety, or welfare of the child or any other person, has a substance abuse problem for which there are no pending criminal charges relating to the substance abuse. At Camp Penny, we have found that at-risk youth struggles with complex issues and scenarios that are brought on by peers, mentors, family members, and difficult social environments. Camp Penny understands.
Hello, Miss Moore.
Hello.
Ms. Moore. Hello. Welcome to Show Talk with Angela Butler, Miss Moore.
Thank you.
I'm glad to have you on the show.
Thanks very much. I'm very pleased to be on this show.
Thank you. Were you the first African American actress to replace a white actress? How did this make you feel?
Oh, you must be talking about Hair when I replaced Diane Keaton.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Oh, it's a long time ago, so I can't quite tell you how I felt, except that I'm sure the whole experience was very exciting.
Oh, okay. You were also a Tony Award winner for Pearly. How did you feel portraying the character Lutabelle?
Of course, that was very exciting, too. That was my first real acting role where I had to sustain a character throughout the play, because Hair was different in terms of the script. It was a lot of vignettes, a little sketches, but Pearly was what they call a true book play, where, it was one story, not a whole bunch of little stories strung together, and so that was much more difficult and much more challenging, yeah.
Okay. You did a tribute to Whitney Houston last night, and it could be seen on your website online. Did you know Miss Whitney Houston personally?
But my relationship was more with her mom, Dr. Sissy Houston, and our paths had crossed, several times over the years, but I really spent quite a good quality time with Dr. Houston, and that was the primary relationship that I had with the Houston family. Of course, I've been a longtime friend of Dionne Warwick's, her aunt or cousin, as it turns out. And just, you know, I have the sense of closeness that the whole world does, because you just are so close to her music. You feel as though you know her, but my relationship really was with her mom.
Oh, okay. All right. You also had a show entitled The Melba Boy Clifton Davis Show. Which show did your television show replace?
Oh, that was the summer replacement for Carol Burnett.
Oh, okay. All right. You've paved the way for a lot of African-American women and even men who are in entertainment or singing with your beautiful voice, singing and acting. A lot of people I'm sure are grateful to you for you paving the way for them.
Hopefully so. I mean, you don't have any control over the time that you're born and what time you're in. You're born and you deal with what you have. The opportunities have come for me during a certain time, and now I've had some longevity, so I guess I can be credited with paving the way, but I don't really feel so much as though I've opened the way or done anything. I've just tried to survive and try to keep a job and try to be good at what I do. And I think, people coming along now will probably feel the same way in terms of, I don't know. Actually, I've heard some people say, I paved the way for you. You need to respect me. I've been watching too much reality TV, huh?
Okay. All right. Let's talk about Les Miserables. I hope I pronounced it right. This musical.
Les Miserables.
Miserable. Okay, thank you for correcting me. In this musical, you are the only African-American woman that has acted in the role of Fantine.
Yes. Are you familiar with Les Miserables?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Yeah, well, it's a story about the French Revolution, so it's not really about African-Americans. So for them to put a black person in it was really stretching the casting, but I seem to have... I'm not fair-skinned or anything.
Oh, okay.
But once I got into character and into costume and everything, and it just seemed to fit. So I was lucky that way. And once again, it's not something I was so smart to do. The opportunity was there, and it was just, the role of Fantine is the female lead in Les Miserables. And, of course, it's a classic story now. It had been on Broadway for about 20 years, and then, of course, most recently it was made into a film, so the notoriety and the fame of it was renewed all over again, so I'm very pleased to have had the opportunity to play the lead role. And, of course, again, since it wasn't about African-American people, that means it's something, kind of unusual, so I'm proud of that.
All right. What was it like to perform with Miss Eartha Kitt in the musical Timbuktu?
Well, Eartha Kitt, again, was from an era before mine, and so naturally I felt that she was one of the artists like Pearl Bailey, Ella Fitzgerald, Diane Carroll, some of the singers like Nancy Wilson that come before me. Were icons, and so to play opposite someone like that was extremely powerful and exciting and inspirational to me. And of course, people who have seen her work on television and film and know her from some of the hit recordings that she had will, all attest to the fact that she was a great, 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 great artist, not just famous, but a real fine, disciplined actor and performer. So it was a great honor.
Oh, okay. It was a great honor. Okay. I can imagine. I can only imagine. Ms. Moore, you also performed at the New York City Metropolitan Opera House. From what I in a non-operatic solo concert. How does this accomplishment make you feel? You're the first.
Once again, very. I guess I feel like the hand of God has been on me to be in a position to do so many things that not a lot of artists have had an opportunity to do. Metropolitan Opera, of course, is for opera, not for categories outside of that, except in a few instances. And my background does include opera, but of course I'm not known for that, and that's not what I do for my living normally. And my concert there, and I hope to go back again, was not opera. It was my Broadway work and contemporary works of R&B recording artists, some of them my own too. So it was just, I guess, a sign that that I was recognized among the great artists, whether I was opera or regardless of my nationality. So naturally, that was a great, 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 great honor. I could add a few more greats.
Okay. All right. You'll be performing in Atlanta, Georgia. Would you like to tell my listeners about that?
Yes, I'm going to be doing a gospel play called Good God Almighty. So I guess you can tell it's going to be a comedy, right?
Okay. All right.
It's a musical comedy, and I play the part of Sister Reen L. Dimp. I don't know where they got that name from, but black comedies like that, okay? And
okay.
she's a very feisty church lady who wants to be in charge of everything and everybody. And then a new pastor, the pastor passed away, and they're getting a new pastor. And, of course, the pastor is the boss. He's the head of the church. He determines what the policies are, and he helps, you know, establish the rules and bylaws of the church. But she's not having it. She says, you're going to go by the rules that my Reverend Percy made before, and that's how it's going to be. And don't nobody, and I'm going to, if it's the last thing I do, I'm going to get rid of the new pastor because he don't do like I say he's supposed to do.
Oh, okay.
That's my character. Plus, of course, she sings and brings out.
Okay.
Yes, I'm very excited about that and about the couple that's producing it, Lolita and Jerome Snipes, because once again they're young black entrepreneurs who are carving their way. Now, you know, the gospel play, the gospel musical, is yet another genre that African Americans have created. You know, the art form is only about 20 years old, so it's a new art form. That's the way I look at it, and it's a new area of business and entrepreneurism that young black people are creating and developing, like Tyler Perry. People can get a good example of what I'm talking about in terms of what huge business that he and other geniuses like him have created out of African-American culture in legitimate theater, which is probably going to be the basis for the new Broadway. The Broadway, as we know it now, was started essentially by Jewish people and stories about their community, which developed into what is now Broadway, which is, you know, of course, stories about everything. And it's, of course, you know, the thing that Broadway epitomizes is just excellence. And I think Lolita and Jerome Snipes are typical of, you know, Tyler Perry kind of excellence that is coming out of this new art form called the gospel musical. So I'm excited about it as, you know, as an actor, of course. That's going to be wonderful.
Yes.
But once again, we're breaking ground in terms of African Americans creating things that are very, very, very prosperous, positive. And, of course, being a born-again Christian, I'm truly excited that we are leading the way in something that's going to come to the aid of our commerce and our economy, but in such a godly and positive way. I could go on and on and on about what I think personally about this mode of entertainment, something that is driven by morality, by holiness, not just money.
Okay. All right. You have a new CD entitled Forevermore. The single Love is up for 2 Grammy Awards in the category of Best Short Form Musical Video and Best Traditional R&B Performance. I believe this is your fourth or either your fifth nomination? I know you have a Tony Award. Is this your fourth or your fifth nomination?
I think it's going to be the fifth Grammy nomination, yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. Well, Ms. Melba Moore, we're going to go to break, and I'm going to play your song, Love Is.
Yay! Thank you.
All right. Okay. All right. About paving the way for African Americans with gospel musicals and things, but you've paved the way also for African Americans. The song Lift Every Voice and Sing featured different artists such as Mr. Freddie Jackson, Stevie Wonder, Bobby Brown, Miss Dionne Warwick. You went to Congress and had the song established as the black national anthem.
That's correct. Now that's something I really did actively try to do in terms of opening the way and paving the way for us to as African Americans, many of us did not know that we had our own national hymn, it's called, as well as the Star Spangled Banner. And that, of course, every nation is they have their own national anthem. They have a song that identifies them. And, of course, since African Americans were brought here as slaves, we are a nation within a nation, as all the immigrants are here in America. So you have the song of whatever country you come from, if you came from Italy, if you came from Spain, if you come from the Bahamas, if you come from Germany. All those nations have songs that identify them. And our struggles developed songs where people would come together and sing, lift every voice and sing at rallies, at demonstrations, at meetings. And so that became the song that identified our struggle through for first-class citizenship. And, of course, we have Dr. Martin Luther King and so many others who actually laid down their lives and died. And that song and We Shall Overcome are basically our songs that identify that period and our struggle for freedom and for first-class citizenship. And many of us did not and perhaps still do not know that we have that. So I really made every effort I could to join with the Democratic National Committee and the Congress to put it on record, because many of the things that African Americans have contributed, if they're not on record, somebody can retell the history and it's in the future it's lost. And not only for the future, that was only a few years ago, but we already have young people who are coming up now who need to know what their freedoms and their liberties and their privileges come from. They come from people, blood, sweat, and tears are laying down their lives. And these songs represent this, and this is part of their legacy. That I did on purpose, and I hope I always get credit for that.
Yes, you definitely get credit for that. You did a noble thing. I guess I'd like to talk about the National Council of Negro Women.
Mm-hmm.
You work for Miss Dorothy I. Heights. In what capacity did you work for her in this?
Well, do you know who Dr. Hyde is?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Well, for your listeners who may not know, Dr. Hyde was a community service kind of activist. And she fought for women's rights and for rights for African Americans in the Congress and in all kinds of community life with her organization, the National Council of Negro Women. And I saw her on television speaking one day, and I, like so many other, especially young black women, were just in awe of her. And I reached out to her and asked her, could I just be a part of her organization and just be around her so I could learn to think like she did and be brave and be bold and be innovative in terms of being a positive black woman in my community and, of course, in the entertainment field. And she made me a membership chair so that I toured around the country with her, and she would have these great celebrations called the Black Family Reunions. And they were huge, like, family reunions throughout the year where she had all kinds of activities for all various members of the African-American family. Of course, anyone was invited, but the focus, you know, charity begins at home. And it was very exciting because I met people like Coretta Scott King and Betty Shabazz and all great, 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 great women, Mrs. Clinton. I can't remember all of the incredible people that I met that are making a difference in our lives, in our country, then and now, and will. But I think the most exciting part of it was I was able to take my daughter and my nephew to a lot of them. And my daughter, my husband and I had put her in a French bilingual school because we conceived her in France, and because we wanted her, we were in love, and we wanted all these wonderful input in her life, so she would have these things to grow up to know how she's loved and what a family, you know, that she comes from. But what she did when she traveled around to those black family reunions was she discovered who her heritage was. She discovered who Malcolm X was, and she met Coretta Scott King, and she came back to her little white school and made them celebrate Martin Luther King's birthday. And I think a little girl played Martin Luther King. She made them know who Malcolm X was. That's the influence of being around people like that, to make your heritage and your history come alive in you, so you take part in making history in your time now, even if you're a child.
Yes. All right. You won a Tony Award, like I said earlier. You've been nominated. This is your fifth time being nominated for a Grammy. Did your first nomination surprise you? When you first got nominated for a Grammy the first time, did it surprise you?
I'm always surprised.
Okay.
So many incredible, so many incredible talented people out there that you're in competition with just for the nomination. So absolutely, yes.
Okay.
You don't ever expect to really get a nomination because it's very political and there's so many people to compete with. So that you're in the number is quite an honor.
All right. I hope you win too.
Thank you.
You are very passionate about children. You have given your time working for children who are abused or left behind, or children born with AIDS and things like that. Why was this important to you to work with the Hale House and to work with these children? Why was that important to you?
I guess it just touched my heart when I saw in the news, it's quite a few years ago now, that the beginning of the introduction of crack and those kinds of drugs into our neighborhoods, they had the effect of young women going out and partying and, you know, having sex with God knows who, getting pregnant. And then, of course, they had no way to take care of the children. They were being abandoned at the prenatal units in the hospitals. And there was kind of an alarm set out to people over the news programs that they needed volunteers just to come up and hold and bond the babies, because the women were leaving the hospital and leaving the babies in there, abandoning them. And I said, oh, my God, I can't believe this is happening. You know, in my families, in the black neighborhoods in Harlem. So I became a volunteer, and that's how it began. And then once I got involved with it, I realized, well, you can't just come up for a few hours and hold the babies. You got to do something about changing it. And so I got involved with one of the organizations that I knew did the best work and, you know, close to me, where I could come and get on the board of directors and get some experience at how you run a foundation and how you make a difference with abandoned children. That's how it began.
Okay, that's how it began. And then you started a foundation of your own.
Right.
Okay, all right.
Right.
So you've really given back to the community, to your community. You're a philanthropist.
I'm trying.
You're trying? Okay.
I'm trying.
Was the role you portrayed in The Fight and Temptations, I have to ask, was this, do you have a favorite character out of everything that you performed in and acted in? Do you have a favorite character, and do you prefer film or Broadway?
Well, I really prefer comedy. I think that's my natural gift, and that's why I'm so excited about Good God Almighty, because I think that comedy is going to wind up being the thing that kind of catapults me if I get the opportunities that I'd like to get. And so, I mean, that's why I got a Tony Award. Pearlie was a comedy. And I think I have a natural bent toward that, of course, in music. And so, naturally, my favorite thing is comedy. I look at so many, well, I don't look at too much of the television because it's too dark, but I wouldn't want to be on some of these hit shows. They're too dark and too sad and too violent. I want to do something with that brings joy to people. I want to bring the gospel. That's the good news. I'm not trying to bring bad news.
Okay, I understand that. I understand the way you feel. Some of it is very violent. You have numerous songs that have topped the charts, such as Keeping My Lover Satisfied, Love's Coming At You, and Read My Lips. When you were making these songs, did you ever write any of them?
There's a bunch of songs that have never been released, excuse me, here in the States, that have just been released in the UK that I co-wrote, and I think they're going to have some popularity, so that maybe once they get out again and people hear them, I'll be able to write some more. But I was just beginning to start to write, and then my career and my life took another different turn, so I didn't have the time that a writer needs. You have to be able to, you know, contemplate and be quiet and take time and allow the process to happen. You can't be fighting to pay your rent, you know. So
okay.
Hopefully I'll get back to that.
All right, I'm gonna play your song again. Love Is from your CD Forevermore,
mm-hmm.
and give the listeners a chance to hear the song again.
Great. You know, I don't have that information handy with me. I've been running around so much today. But you can go to my website, melbourne.com, and you can get the information. It's going to be in Atlanta, and I think it starts February 14th, and it's at the 14th Street. I'm giving the wrong information. It's the 14th Street Playhouse in Atlanta. And it'll be running through, I think, the 25th of February. But please go to my website, melbourne.com, and you can get the information. And also, Good God Almighty has its own website, or Lolita Snipes. You can go to her website and you get the information. I apologize, I didn't have it on hand.
That's okay. That's okay. You have an autobiography that you are working with by a gentleman by the name of Mr. Mel Watkins, a professor for the New York Times, an ex-professor for the New York Times, ex-writer for the New York Times, and a professor. When will your autobiography be released and available to the general public?
All right. Well, I was working with Mr. Mel Watkins, and I'm not working with him anymore on it. But actually, the autobiography is finished. But now I'm shopping for a publisher, so that's kind of an open-ended thing. And so I don't really have a date for that yet. But the book is finished, and now it has to be edited, and it has to be placed with a publisher.
Oh, okay.
And right now, the title for it is Still Standing, The Melba Moore Story.
Oh, okay. Still Standing, The Melba Moore Story. All right. That's wonderful. Ms. Melba Moore, I'd just like to, one of my last questions will be, what advice can you give to young women and men in this day and age who are trying to make it in entertainment or acting? As an actress or actor, Broadway, singing, what advice can you give to them?
Well, get as much training as you can, whatever level of school, if you're in school, see if you can get some coaching or experience in, you know, if you're in junior high school, elementary, maybe there's an acting club or a theater club or a drama club, or always take dance and some kind of exercise or physical activity, too, because you need a lot of stamina to be a singer or an actor. It's almost like prize fighting as far as I'm concerned. And even in your church, you can start a drama ministry or a musical ministry. And, of course, everybody knows the best singers in the world come from the church. And that's not just, you know, the black church. When God teaches you something, you've been to the good conservatory in university, so go to your church community, and if they don't have anything, then you start something or get them to start something within the church, because the main environment about the church is they're there to help and nurture you. They're not there to judge you. And if you have no experience, even if you have any talent, because you are a child of God, you have a right to explore that. So I would say start there. If you're an adult, you know, maybe you're out of school, then I would see where they have open mics, see where if money's an issue, see if there are places that you can go to get coaching and studying, start asking around. That doesn't cost money, and if you have friends, relatives that are in the industry, start inquiring of them of how they got started, if they can help you get started. Just wherever you are, start asking questions, or start trying to get involved in it. Don't worry about making money first. Just get involved in it. See, because whether you make a profession of acting or music or an instrument or not, if you just make it a hobby, it enhances your whole view of life. It enhances your confidence in yourself. It enhances your ability to communicate with people and to expand your boundaries and your surroundings and expand your way of thinking. So it's not just a job. It's expanding your point of view and your way of thinking. Yes. The arts and the communication arenas are just healing for people. It's excellent for you to be in. So naturally, I would encourage everybody to get involved, not just for a vocation or for a job. Just get in it and start learning to express yourself and promote yourself. Or if you're one who always takes the spotlight, learn some humility. This is the human skills that you get out of it.
Yes.
I'm excited about having fallen into the arts, because my family is musical, so I was brought up with music. But what it has done for me as a person, I don't have words to express. So I encourage everybody to get involved in it. And I know that everyone feels that the music industry for some time had suffered a great deal because they've taken music and the arts out of the public schools at every level.
Yeah.
And it really has affected our ability to appreciate music, even if you're not participating in it as an active person, your level of to appreciate it and enjoy it is enhanced by your getting involved in it, especially if you can start early in elementary school.
Yes, and it gives to children and teenagers and young adults a way to express themselves.
Exactly, you put it perfectly,
and it helps them with their creativity, and you
absolutely.
Know.
Absolutely. And you never know what that's gonna what's that. It's, it always opens up something good for you. It's not like, you know, playing with guns, okay?
No.
It's opens up something that very often you might not know about yourself unless you explore and experiment with those kinds of things. It's, as you said, it's creativity, and that's just something that is an awesome, miraculous, mystical gift that all of us have to, in some kind of capacity. And,
yes.
And it's just amazing.
God,
to yes, he made us expressive creatures, and when we share that with each other, our whole community is always enhanced. You know, it brings us together, it brings a bonding, it brings a unity. It's excellent for so many purposes.
All right. Thank you for leaving that with my listeners. What you were just saying, Ms. Melba Moore, thank you for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm very honored that you asked me and that you're interested in my point of view of things. Thank you for sharing your listeners with me.
Yes, and your song and voice is so beautiful. You have a beautiful
voice. Thank you.
All right.
Once again, thank you, and I love you, listeners.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Have a good night, Ms. Moore.
Thank you.
All right, listeners, we had on that was Ms. Melba Moore on Show Talk with Angela Butler. She has a new CD and a musical play that she's going to be in, as you heard her talk about. The CD is Forevermore, and the single that I played was Love Is. I thank you, listeners, for listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. I look forward to being back tomorrow night at the same time. All right, so thank you all, and have a good night. I hope you enjoyed the show.